Pray that you will bless our efforts, send the Spirit to guide us in the right direction, and make this a blessed Sabbath day, Father. Amen.
So, we need to issue a correction. Last week, I suggested that today and tomorrow were both Sabbaths. I was wrong. Today and today are both Sabbaths. My counter was off.
Oh.
Today is the seventh day Sabbath, and it's also the eighth day. So today is two Sabbaths, double Sabbath, both the festival Sabbath and a seventh day Sabbath. Just need to do some counting. Is special about the eighth day, and why is it there? It's the last festival, but it's not really even listed as a festival. And yet the eighth day is something which has a great deal of significance. So we kind of briefly talked about it last week, what the various things that are associated with the eighth day off. Let's kind of go over those again. We all think of circumcision. That one's easy. Rather memorable for some reason. But it's not the only thing. If you are a leper and you think you are healed, you've gotten over your leprosy. There is a procedure with which to go through to identify whether or not you're healed. It happens to be a seven-day process, in which case, if you show no symptoms after 7 days, on the eighth day, you are considered purified, healed, safe. The same thing is true for all kinds of bodily discharges. If you want to go back and look at Leviticus 14 and 15, they tell you all kinds of bodily discharges that happen. And they happen usually to do with menstruation, all kinds of other types of things which we usually don't talk about, are mentioned in the Bible and saying, if you happen to have any of these things, if you happen to have syphilis, gonorrhea, or any of those types of things, then basically you're unclean. And anything you come in contact with, have to stay away from other people for 7 days. And on the eighth day, you can be considered clean. The ones that I find most interesting, though, are two other things besides the health and safety considerations. And those have to do with the consecration of the temple and the altar. When the altar is sanctified, it is a seven-day process with it being consecrated, dedicated on the eighth day. So when the first temple was set up, Solomon had a big, big feast in which he killed 22,000 oxen and 120,000 lambs for this 1 week celebration. And on the eighth day, the temple was dedicated. It happens to have been the eighth day, as in today, as in specifically the eighth day. So that entire week-long celebration happened during the Feast of Tents, Feast of Tabernacles. And then on the eighth day, the temple was consecrated, dedicated. There's also the process of consecrating, dedicating the priests. And that process also happens to be a seven-day process, with the eighth day they can become priests and go through the administration process. So effectively, the Bible says, if you, on your 30th year, you can become a priest. There is a week-long process of going through the initiation of becoming a priest. It's a 1 week process, and on the eighth day, you are a priest. You go back and you take a look at all the different references to the eighth day, and they all have to do with purification and dedication, consecration. Those are the things which are associated with the eighth day. This comes after the Feast of Tabernacles, the 1 week celebration. But what I find interesting is this. The ordination of the priesthood is an 8 day process, 7 days plus the eighth day to become ordained. We are all familiar with the idea of who we are as a church. We are called to be a nation of priests. We are to be a part of the temple. We are part of the building blocks of the temple, along with the prophets and the apostles and Jesus. We are actually part of the Lego system. We're all built into that system. We are a part of it. And as a people, we are called to be priests. And on the eighth day, there will be an ordination of the priesthood. So take a look at how all of these things work. As you guys know, I believe that the festivals are all a part of the plan of salvation. Jesus dies. That's the very first one. It ends with us becoming a part of the nation of priests. And the question is why in heaven would we be priests? There's no need, there's no temple in heaven. So why does heaven need a nation of priests? Or am I misunderstanding something? Is this nation of priesthood thing prior to the second coming? Has nothing to do with heaven. But if you take a look at the Bible, it appears that, in my opinion, that the festivals are marking monumental events, death of Jesus, and we end with the very last thing, being we are integrated into the temple and become a part of the temple. In fact, if you go back and look at Revelation, I think it's 3, chapter 3, verse 1, I think, if I remember right. We are told that we become, for those who overcome, we become a part of the temple. We become pillars in the temple. Let me check. I even made a note so I wouldn't forget where I'm at.
Revelation 3 is the temple, or the angel's message to the church at Sardis.
So go to 3:12. So look at Revelation 3, verse 12, and tell me what that says.
It's the church at Philadelphia. It says, everyone who wins the victory will be made into a pillar in the temple of my God, and they will stay there forever. I'll write on each of them the name of my God and the name of his city. It is the new Jerusalem my God will send down from heaven. I will also write on them my own new name.
So, those who overcome become a part of the temple of heaven. They become pillars in the temple, and they're never let out. You're going to be stuck there forever, is what it said. That's what it says.
Wow.
So when does the priesthood begin? Do you become a part of the nation of priests when you join the church? Do you become a nation of the priests when you accept Jesus? Do you become, what's this reference to us becoming a nation of priests? When does that happen?
I thought it would be baptism maybe, or accepting Christ.
Okay. Is that I mean, that sounds perfectly logical and reasonable to me. Is it the only time it happens? Is there, so I guess here's kind of what I'm thinking. You tell me if I'm wrong. I think that when we accept Jesus, when we baptize, when we join the church, when we join the community of believers, we become a part of that mission of priests. Fully agree with that. I also think that there is a role for those people who go through the time of the end to become ambassadors to the universe. And their job is to reenact the story of salvation throughout eternity. They are effectively the demonstration squad. We all know where I get that idea from. Am I wrong? Is that what happens or not happens?
Where do you get that idea from?
Do I get that idea from?
Might be having visions that we're not.
Well, think about that for a minute. I'll jump in.
Please do.
There's another eighth day that we have not talked about, and that's the eighth day of creation. So there's this 7-day process, but the eighth day is humanity's kind of first day on their own, and God has created them in this process to be in his image for a purpose. And the eighth day begins their purpose, begins their work. Right, God's work stops. He rests, he Sabbaths. He's done, but man begins on the eighth day. So it's like God has taken his creative work and ability and transferred it to these humans and said, okay, now you go create. There's a very strong link between the verse in Revelation and the verse in Genesis. When God gives mankind his responsibilities, you know, there's these words. One of them is to subdue and to husband and to care for. And that word is tied to the Greek word used for pillar, which is to support and to strengthen and to build up and to take care of, to husband. So that's kind of an interesting eighth day to think about. If you're kind of talking about a concentration. Might be a concentration camp, I don't know.
Consecration.
For a purpose, right? It's not just to get the title and the fancy clothes. No, it's for an important purpose. And I think on the eighth day, God has finished his creative task for an important purpose and given that to mankind and said, now you guys go out of this walled garden, the paradise idea, and go do your thing. Let's see what happens. You guys are created with a purpose. And I personally don't think that purpose ends at the second coming. I think the purpose is so much larger than we often give it credit for. God gives us a lot of credit, gives us a lot of authority, builds us into his temple that is going to last forever. There's going to be a need for this purpose forever. And the Bible is very clear that sin will never again come up. But I believe that possibility of sin will remain forever. It has to in a kingdom of free will, free choice. But that it won't, and maybe it even can't, after this earthly experience and these human partners that God has made. Now, Steve and I didn't talk about this. He doesn't know what I'm saying here, but
you're saying exactly what I would say. I would agree 100%.
Revelation talks about a group that goes wherever the Lamb goes. Why is that? Not everybody goes wherever the Lamb goes, but there certainly is a group that follows him wherever he goes. And I think that is the ongoing remedy to the sin problem.
It's Revelation 14:4.
So the sin problem will never crop up anymore.
What came to my mind when Steve first mentioned the eighth day of creation was, wasn't that the first day of the beginning of the fall of humanity? We were released to our own devices.
That's one perspective. You know, we don't know when
the serpent actually came in. Yeah,
there's no indication of how long there was in between creation and that happening. That's a perspective that is famously immortalized in John Milton's extended poem, Paradise Lost. I struggle with that view that man is to blame for sin, because we know in the story of creation, God made a place for Satan. So Satan and sin pre-existed the creation, and God puts him in this garden with these newborn people. Right? Why? Because he gives them a purpose. You know, this whole idea of going outside of the garden to subdue and to take over, to husband and to grow and to fill it full of something else. Then what was there, right? And that task still remains, right? All right, I'm gonna stop.
Question for
get
you.
Get off my little box here.
Were there trees of knowledge of good and evil on other worlds?
Bible doesn't speak about that.
It does not. Therefore, we have no knowledge of that, right?
The Bible doesn't speak about it. Others do.
I was just wondering how you reconcile that concept that you just expressed with that.
I think what Ron's saying is like, okay, put a three-year-old in a room with a bowl full of M&Ms and say, don't eat the M&Ms. Instead, right, I'd say they're doomed to eat the M&Ms. You know, we're doomed to sin.
I don't know that it was an absolute 100% possibility that Adam and Eve would sin. I do think there is a possibility that they wouldn't have sinned.
Yeah, but eventually you deal with their offspring, and you know, all it takes is one bad apple.
But I think God was confident in the outcome, whether they sinned or didn't sin.
Yeah.
The outcome was going to be the same. Now, what happens in between is a lot different.
What about the fact that we're created in his image? So does that mean God has issues with making drastic decisions like pulling fruit from a tree?
No, then it says he was tempted as we were.
Can they hear us?
So he
passed it. Yeah.
So he has the same issues. He just wanted to see how we're going to fare through them. You know, I don't know.
So that would be the burden of choice.
And yeah, the burden of choice is just to live like this.
Bring Sally up to speed of where we're at.
That's quite simple.
She's lost.
The eighth day, the last festival, the last Sabbath of the festival system, the last festival of the plan of salvation, has to do with purification, dedication, and consecration in regards to the Nazirite vow, which we haven't talked about, in regards to leprosy, in regard to the circumcision, in regard to the bodily discharges and purification, in regards to the dedication of the altar, in regard to the ordination of the priests. All of them are 1 week long processes with an 8-day relief, resolution, purification, part of the, you are now a part of the team. You're back into the community. You've now, my belief is this, that on the eighth day is the day in which God says, okay, you're welcome back in the universe. You're free. You've gone through the process. You've demonstrated that you're clean. You're healed. You are a part of the universe, and you're free to run around and cause havoc again. That's what I think is the last day of the plan of salvation. It's the culmination of the entire process. It, I think, is on this day.
Literally this day.
Literally this day. that happens, which would be the 23rd day of the seventh month.
So we understand tradition, they dwelt in tabernacles or shelters through this day, and then disassembled their shelters and moved to their dwellings on the ninth day?
No, the other way around. They were instructed to stay in the tabernacles for 7 days, which would have been through last night. So last night was not a part of it. So you could theoretically go back to your own beds last night, because the eighth day began at sundown last night. Which is a good thing, because it started to rain last night.
Hey, it rained hard.
So think about what that meant. Go back to the tabernacles. Tabernacles follows the Day of Atonement, the Day of Forgiveness. Day of Forgiveness follows the warning, the Feast of Shouts. Those are the festivals which have not met their full resolution at the time of Christ. Now, not all of us like the idea of the festivals. I know for a fact that some in this group, not necessarily here in this room today, but I know as a part of us, not all of us like the idea of the festivals. Some of us think the festivals are done. They were finished at the cross. And in fact, there is the idea by some in this congregation who believe that to do or honor or to keep the festivals is morally wrong. It's morally wrong because to do so is to deny Jesus. That's the argument. Obviously, I'm of the different opinion. And I'm not here to say that that person is wrong. For them, that may be correct. But to me, logically, the festivals have got to apply to us again. Because every single one of them happened after the time of Christ, with the exception of Passover, in which he died. Every one of these was post-Jesus. Let me go back and do a quick review. What is the first festival? Roy, I'm going to have you read something for us. Leviticus 23. Start at the very beginning. What is the first festival mentioned in Leviticus 23? Start with verse 1 and read through verse 3, if you would.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. The Sabbath is the first. Verse 3.
Yep.
6 days shall you be, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings.
The first feast is the Sabbath. At least that's what Leviticus 23 says.
Do you think it's a seventh-day Sabbath or one of the other Sabbaths?
You tell me. What do you think it means?
Well, it talks about 6 days, so it makes it sound like it's a seventh-day Sabbath.
Yeah, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest.
So you guys tell me, what does Leviticus 23, 1 through 3 mean? Is that the first feast, and is that feast the seventh day Sabbath? Now, am I misreading that? There's multiple different versions. Maybe we should. What, Roy, what version of the Bible are you reading from? New King James, all right. I'm going to read it to you out of this version I have, which is a contemporary English version. The Lord told Moses to say to the community of Israel, I have chosen certain times for you to come together and worship me. You have 6 days when you can do your work, but the seventh day of each week is holy because it belongs to me. No matter where you live, you must rest on the Sabbath and come together for worship. This law will never change. In Roy's version, it declares it's the first feast. Am I misreading that?
That sounds like that. That's what it's describing.
So how many feasts are there? How many festivals? We know about, are there seven? If we have seven, then do we count this one as one of them? Is this one of the festivals or feasts of God?
It says it is.
It says it is. So the first one is the seventh day Sabbath that happens every 7 days. That's feast number one. The second feast that's mentioned is Passover. If we continue that process, we have Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits. I'm now up to four. Festival of Weeks, which is Pentecost, which we often know as Easter, is the fifth. We have Shouts, which is the first day of the seventh month. We have the Day of Atonement, Day of Forgiveness. We have the Feast of Tabernacles. And we have the eighth day.
The Jews considered the eighth day just part of Festival of Tabernacles.
But is it?
I'm telling you what they.
It is. When you take a look at the instructions regarding the Festival of Tabernacles and the eighth day, it says the Festival of Tabernacles is a 7 day festival.
It's a 7 day festival. It's 7 days.
Oh, and by the way, stick around for the eighth day because something special is happening. It does make a distinction between it. And if you go and look at everybody, we often have lists of seven festivals. And it's interesting that when you go around and look at different people's charts, they don't all have the same seven. You'll find about, I don't know what percentage, but you'll have a bunch of them which do not even mention the eighth day. Those who do mention the eighth day often don't mention first fruits.
Do they consider that part of Passover?
Yeah.
And like numbering the Ten Commandments.
You'll find none of them mention the Sabbath day, the seventh day Sabbath. And yet Leviticus 1 through 23, 1 through 3 say clearly that the Sabbath is a part of the festival system. True or false? I want somebody to tell me I'm wrong. I want somebody who does not agree with that idea to say that's not right and why.
I don't think it's coincidence he calls the special days within the feasts Sabbaths. And he calls the seventh day Sabbath. But I don't know.
We as a church keep the first one. We ignore all the others. And all the other churches in the community ignore all of them, except for Easter.
Yeah, But the other churches ignore the, if you look at the Ten Commandments, you know, we pride ourselves on following all the Ten Commandments, whereas we condemn the other churches because they don't. They only follow most of them.
All right, so now let's go take a look at Ezekiel chapter 20.
Ezekiel what?
Ezekiel chapter 20.
Right.
I want to go look at Ezekiel chapter 20. And Ezekiel chapter 20 is talking about Israel and why Israel, you know, God really got upset with Israel, saying, look, I'm taking you out of Egypt. I've demonstrated to the whole world what an incredible, strong, powerful God that I am. And I've taken you out here into the wilderness, and I'm taking you to Canaan. And you guys had just repeatedly chosen to ignore me. I'm not happy. In fact, I'm so unhappy, I'm going to destroy you. Oh, shoot, I can't destroy you because that will make me look bad. That's what it says in Ezekiel 20. It would make me look bad in front of all the other nations. So therefore, I'm not going to totally destroy you like I really, really want to do. Instead, I'm promising I'm going to scatter you to the nations. I'm going to scatter you everywhere. That's what I'm going to do. I can do that and still not look too bad about it, making you my people. But if you go to read through this entire chapter and you take a look at it, it says, look, I'm really unhappy with these people that I pulled out of Egypt, but I'm now going to put my effort and time in on the children, because the children have at least some hope. But then he gets down to verse 19. So Ezekiel 20, chapter 20, verse 19. I reminded them that I was the Lord their God, and that they should obey my laws and teachings. Verse 20. I told them to respect my Sabbath, to show that they were my people, and that I was the Lord their God. But the children also rebelled against me. They refused to obey my laws and teachings, and they treated the Sabbath just like any other day. Just the phrasing of that was curious. We'll often hear people say, well, all I need to do is worship on one day, and it doesn't matter which day. God says, see, to me it matters. I personally believe that we as a people, when I tell people that I'm studying the festivals, they get interested. Really, I don't know much about them. They're curious. Tell me more. Oftentimes our church will have evangelistic series. Those evangelistic series, of which I've been to a couple of, how many of you have been to an Adventist evangelistic series? Three? Four, five. I assume Dana's been to one. Six. So three
over and over
and over and over. And they all say the same thing. And they're nice, they're wonderful things. For those of you who have not been to one, effectively, if you go to an Adventist evangelistic series, they're going to start out with the book of Daniel. And they're going to start out with the image that you find there in Daniel. And they're going to tell you about Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, the feet of iron and clay, and how that's turned into apostate Rome. That's how it starts out, puts dates on it, puts nice imagery with it, and that's where our denomination is. It is a good series. A lot of people tend to attend those, and they go, wow, God really does work through history. And a lot of people join the church. It's successful. It works. Nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong. It's correct. It's accurate. What I think we should do also is reach out to them on the festivals. Because in my opinion, the festivals tell the plan of salvation as well. And they tell it in a much more vibrant way. I think we as a group should adopt those things and integrate them into our schedules. We should build our school, our church, holidays around those things, because those are God's festivals. So not the Jewish festivals. These are God's festivals. They're his chosen appointed times. He says, these are the times I want you to come together and worship me. And the question is, why shouldn't we? Why do we instead adopt and build into our calendars the secular system, God's system we ignore? We instead adopt and build into our system Satan's substitutes, and we adapt those. And the question is, why? Anyway, that's my point. That's my position. The Sabbath is part of the festivals. We believe in the Sabbath. We believe the Sabbath is important. It is one of the festivals. Anybody who thinks we should stop at that point and do what with the rest, tear them out of my Bible? I will happily tear out of my Bible Leviticus chapter 23 of anybody who thinks I should. I'll go nail it to a cross, or at least I'll have you nail it to a cross.
It's interesting, and the famous verse in 2 Corinthians or Corinthians 2, Colossians 2, sorry, it talks about that. Nailing to the cross, that section ends with, don't let anyone judge you in meat or drink or in respect to the feasts or the new moons or the Sabbaths. You've quoted that one, but the next verse says, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. Like these things, I don't know, to me that says that these festivals, this is saying, is the body of Christ. Does it read that way to you?
There are two ways of reading Colossians 2, verse 16.
16, 17.
So, if you go back and you go to the beginning of Colossians and you read it from the beginning, chapter 1 all the way through 2:16, you find that many of the references to the festivals that are being talked about are the pagan festivals that have been, that are a part of the culture. So one way of doing it is saying that the festivals that are being referenced is the pagan festivals. The other way is the way in which you just referenced, is that these festivals are a part of Jesus. They are a part of God. They are Him. And we often stop, you're correct, just before we get to that phrase. We like the part we can ignore them. Because, to be honest with you, in Leviticus 17, there's some really, really strange things that are exceptionally difficult. In fact, I don't think any of us would accept that part of God. In fact, I think we'd all say it's wrong. I won't worship the God who commands that.
If we're Jesus followers, and Paul seems to be saying here that these festivals are shadows or somehow representative of Him, then it seems like it's important for us to understand them and watch them.
I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me I'm wrong. Maybe Andy's here to do that.
Well, I think in terms of, our calendar, our public calendars, there's good reason to utilize the festivals and the calendars of the society we live in. I don't think there's good reason to ignore the biblical calendar simultaneously.
I agree.
God kind of calls us to live in two kingdoms simultaneously. And,
I think you might be wrong because...
Thank you.
one thing our church believes in, that Andy Allen was interpreter of scripture, although she says what I interpret is different from the Bible, then disregard my comments. So. And she's kind of unclear on what I've been studying on. Either she didn't know, or she kind of deferred, or stated the opinion at the time, her husband.
Is very emphatic.
Yeah, he was, but that's not who the church describes as an interpreter of scriptures, you know, either. So maybe it was for a harmonious marriage, or she didn't know, or. But you could be wrong, because she doesn't offer any counsel or interpretation specifically enough to say, yeah, baby, this is it, or nope.
All right, so can I rephrase what some of the people on Zoom couldn't hear very well. Mike saying, you might be wrong because Ellen White doesn't address the subject. James White does, very emphatically. Maybe Ellen White didn't to keep harmony in the house. But kind of dodges the issue. Am I saying what you said fairly well?
Or she just didn't know, or wasn't given light on it.
So I actually found a study, which I cannot find a second time, which went through and reviewed all of Ellen White's comments on the subject of justice. I wish I could find it, because it was a very well-written study.
You say that she's 50-50. We can't determine from what she's written.
I will express exactly what I think here, but go ahead.
Okay,
here's what she does say. She starts out in the early part of her writings being along the lines of festivals, you know, we've talked about it, and we're not so sure that they should be adopted and followed. That's her initial thought. As she progressed through life, towards the end of her life, she started to say things like, there might be something here, maybe, but she never really fleshes that out. She does talk a lot about the idea of camp meeting being related perhaps to the Feast of Tabernacles, the Festival of Ingathering. But that's not really an endorsement, in my opinion, of the festival system. It is rather an endorsement of camp meeting, and camp meeting and Festival of Ingathering maybe have some commonality, but it's not an endorsement. So White never does come out and endorse the festivals.
And I think there's a record she never observed or practiced the festivals.
That's correct, she did not. James White, her husband, was emphatically opposed to them. He wrote quite a bit, and what he wrote was a rejection of the festivals, saying we should not honor these festivals. If we honor these festivals, we deny Christ. We deny that Christ died on the cross for us, because when he died on the cross, that festival is done. That was James White's position.
Stephanie is also pointing out that James White wanted clear separation from this group of believers from the Jews.
True.
And in fact, I'll even add to what she was saying. He might have been considered anti-Semite in his views. But he wanted absolutely nothing to do with to be considered Jewish. Now they took the Sabbath, which was, you know, a big step that way. But he certainly did not want to be considered Jewish.
So I guess I take a look at it. We as a church, we often are accused by other denominations of having White be our interpreter of Scripture, and that we rely on White more than we do the Bible. That's a frequent accusation. You will notice that in all of my conversations and all of our stuff that we've been studying, and for those of you who've been reading what I've been writing, I don't mention her at all. I make no reference. Everything I write is biblical and biblical only. I do that for a reason, because I think the Bible is strong in and of itself and says it on our own. I think White is a excellent source to complement our studies, but I do think that we should use the Bible as our primary source for what we decide is true and what we should and should not do. I think logically, as I take a look at Leviticus 23 says the Sabbath is one of the festivals. And I have a really hard time with the idea. So you may this Leviticus chapter 23, verses 1 through 3.
I was listening to everything on Zoom.
Gotcha. So those things, in my opinion, matter. They're strong. If we don't think that's right, I want to know why. Because in my opinion, it's important. I think God's going to do things on these festival days.
you know, I can't say that you're wrong because what you're saying seems to make sense, but I'm not convicted of it. And
I had to buy out.
But the thing is, I mean, I could preach the Sabbath to somebody and they don't act convicted of it. They don't believe it yet. Now I don't, you know, so, or whatever doctrine, because I do see the usefulness of it and so forth. I mean, I agree with what Mike said, because if there's something that I haven't studied out, then I look to the lesser light to lead to the greater light. And, you know, she's not the conclusive. So there we are with the Bible again, which is good. But so I enjoy studying about it, enjoy learning about it. I think you know a lot about it, and I think I have a lot to learn from you about it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm convicted. I believe it's a testing truth. And that, not that I wouldn't ever. Maybe it's just part of my maturity. And so when you when you push, saying, prove me wrong. Well, that's a good challenge for me, maybe for us. But what am I trying to say? That, you know, then makes me think, okay, well, and I'm probably misinterpreting.
Let me tell you a short story about my dad.
My dad switched guitars, but I'm listening.
My dad was not an Adventist when he was raised. He went to the equivalent of the community church. He started dating my mother. She was an Adventist, raised an Adventist. She kept the Sabbath. There was a pastor there in the church, and the pastor challenged my dad, show me where the day was changed from Saturday to Sunday. My dad decided to take up the challenge, and he studied. The more he studied, the more he became convinced that the Bible does say Sabbath is right. And everything I've been studying for all of these years, all of my life, so he's, you know, he's 20, and he suddenly discovered that he should never, ever take what somebody says from the pulpit or from the church for granted. Don't trust them. Always go back to the Bible, see if it's right. Because of that, he chose to keep the Sabbath. As a result, when I was born, I kept the Sabbath. For good or for bad, I was raised that way. He'd been raised as a Sunday keeper, and that Sunday was right. But somebody challenged him and said, prove me wrong. So that's where I kind of get it from. I'm following in my father's statue. I think the Sabbath matters. I can't go to the community church. Nothing wrong with the community church. There's wonderful people there. There really, truly are some very God-fearing, good, loving people in that church. And the same is true with the Episcopal and the Catholic, etc. At the same time, I'm convinced that the Bible says, God says, worship me on my appointed days. My appointed days, number one, is the seventh day Sabbath. The next one happens to be Passover. And the next one happens to be unleavened bread. Those are God's commands. Why do we choose to listen to some of them, not others? But when I go and talk to somebody from the community church, and I sit down with them, and I express to them the Sabbath, they're not convicted. They say, well, yeah, that's fine. That's what it says. But it, you know, it's like water on a duck's back.
Right. But aren't you satisfied that you've done your job?
Well, kind of.
Because who's supposed to convict the man?
You're right. It's not my job to convict. My job is to plant seeds. And some of those seeds will fall on fertile ground, and some on the rocks, and the birds will eat some of them. And I should be happy to just throw the seed. Okay, good advice. I'm happy. Sam.
The book of Acts addresses this in the Nicene Council to not present a stumbling block for the new Christian converts.
Yep.
And it seems that, you know, in my opinion, it seems that the devil has taken advantage of this and created all this tradition through the Holy Roman Church. And what we're battling is tradition. And like Danny was saying, once we come into maturity, the Holy Spirit mixes the words and the witness in this book, then we become to come to that point where we make a personal choice in life to honor these or not honor.
So what, Mike?
Crash this idea. So it's pretty clear that the festivals were given to the Jews, and that's why some people say, well, for the Jews, it's not for us now, but we should keep that as well. But there were some things given to the Jews, I think, that were kind of exclusive. And my understanding, maybe wrong, is that, okay, let's take circumcision, for example. The Jews, that was clearly a sign to the Jews. But then I think Paul later says, you know, when that became a big issue, and that if you're not a Jew, but you wanted to be a Christian, you know, you have. And Paul says, no, you know, that's not one of the secret handshake, you know, things to get into the club. So, you know, is it possible that the festivals were Jewish and they are observed by Jews today, like circumcision? No, they're not.
So here's my trashing of the idea.
Okay. I buy that argument,
but the same is true of the Sabbath. Then the Sabbath is for Jews only as well.
Well, the difference though is that Sabbath was observed after creation with Adam and Eve.
There's nothing in the Bible about Sabbath until Exodus.
Okay, but then we know that after Christ's death, if Christians continue to worship on the seventh day.
They did. Jews did.
Yeah.
That's true. But it's for the
but
Jews
I'm just saying,
only.
You know, maybe the festivals are like the circumcision thing. It's like, okay, this is for my selected group of people, and, you know.
And I will argue with, I buy that argument, but I also buy the argument then that the Sabbath was for the Jews only as well. To me, they are part and parcel.
Disagree.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, if you go back to the fourth, remember the Sabbath day and circumcision, you know, I think it's separated a little more than festivals or circumcision or whatever other Jewish specific thing. Maybe. Like, I'm like Andy, you know, like this is pretty interesting. I'm not really convicted.
You see, I think this kind of discussion is healthy. I think it's necessary for us to have this kind of conversation. I think it's good for us. And I think, why do we believe what we believe and why do we not believe certain things is a very, very healthy discussion to have. I think it is something which is worth discussing more, especially on this topic. Do the festivals apply to us? Does the Sabbath apply to us? If so, why? I mean, we've talked about the Sabbath a bunch over the last 7 months, 6 months, whatever it is. And yet we don't even all agree on what it means. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. If we talk with our other members in the church, obviously, Mike, I agree with you in the sense that I think the Sabbath is important because I happen to keep it. I happen to be a member of this church. I can't go to the Episcopal church because they're on the wrong day. They don't follow what God says.
When the Lord comes, and we're all bound for heaven, are we going to keep all these different Sabbaths? Or will it only be the seventh day, which is spoken of as being
continued? I doubt the people in Zoomland can hear you, Roy, so I'm going to repeat what you said. The question Roy has is, once the second coming happens, once we go to heaven, will we continue to keep any of the Sabbath except the seventh day Sabbath? Is there any evidence of that? You might want to take a look at Isaiah chapter 66 and happen to notice that one of the festivals after the second coming is kept. Post second coming. Why?
I think to the stumbling block idea that Sam referenced is an important concept that refers to the use of something, not the value of the thing itself. There are many things that can be used as weapons against other people that are good and valuable. And so I don't know if that verse says, don't do the festivals. Or, you know, in the council in Acts, when they decide not to hold new believers to these things, I don't know if that's necessarily a referendum on the things themselves, or that they're being used to keep people out of fellowship and community and this new tradition.
And I will challenge the idea that we should not do anything that causes a stumbling block for somebody else, because effectively we become completely and utterly incapacitated. Because everybody in today's society finds something to be a stumbling block.
But there are times when we go out of our way to make somebody stumble with something.
That would be wrong.
And that's, I think, what this is addressing.
Agreed.
Okay. Yeah, and then there's also the we're talking about spiritual stumbling blocks, because I think that's a different category than just the things that people will get offended with.
Yeah. Obviously, we, as some of you have said, I'm not convicted that Leviticus 23 is applicable to me.
It doesn't mean I'm not going to be convicted.
I know. That's right. I'm not condemning you for this. I think it's fine that we have that. I mean, a lot of people sit up here and talk about things that I'm not convicted of after they talk about. That's fine. I think that's between each one of us and God. But I will say this, the more we understand about the festivals and the language and the things that are associated with them, so far we, to be honest with you, have gone over them pretty quickly. There is a whole bunch more language associated with each one. It's like going into all the symbology. If you like, you know, a lot of us, we love Halloween because it's got costumes and it's got this. A lot of people go to the Catholic Church because it's got rituals and that type of thing. It appeals to the human nature. If you look at the Bible, there is a lot of ritual, and it's built into the system. God knows that that's what we need in many ways, and he says, look, I'm going to use these rituals to help you understand my plan. As we look at all of the language associated with that, you will discover that language permeates the entire Bible, not just the Old Testament, but the New Testament also uses festival language all over the place, repeatedly. And it's that where I find it to be fascinating. So I think you have to study the festivals first so that you have a comprehension of what they are, the language that's used. And then once you do that, then you can start taking a look at all those other New Testament things, and Old Testament too, to be honest with you, and see what those have to say. And all of a sudden you say, oh, that's what that's talking about. That's what that's referencing. So we're done with our time here, but to be honest with you, what I want to do is take a look at some of those things that are associated with it. For example, the 49 days from first fruits to weeks is found in more than one place in the Bible. In fact, it's found in multiple places. It's kind of curious. And once you start looking at those, because you understand the festival language, you now say, oh, that's what that means. If you didn't have that festival there, it goes right over your head. You don't comprehend it. God gave us the festivals for a reason. He said, look, 2,000 years ago, I died. And in many a pulpit, you will hear a person say, victory was won, the war is over, and we're all just sitting around here waiting for Jesus to show up, and we don't even know why we're waiting. Hurry up. Someday he's just going to pop into existence and we'll be happy. That's a common belief amongst Christians. The Bible tells you why we're waiting and what role we have to play. The war is not over yet. There's still war to be fought. And we're a part of it, good or bad.
You're going to enjoy some music here, a little musical interlude.
Thank you. Which is probably a good thing.
I should get myself working too.